Greetings, folks. This is Pastor Christopher here with you again as we continue our journey. You are listening to Second Mile, a podcast of Project 516, where we reflect on where the journey has taken us on the trail, talk with people who are finding their own time apart, or those who have that traveled wisdom to share with us together. The road goes ever on, to quote from Tolkien, and having someone alongside you as you walk that second mile can make all the difference. This segment of Second Mile walks with a couple of pastors who have committed to hiking a week's worth of miles on the Appalachian Trail with their friends and family. Starting at the southern terminus in Georgia, we'll be heading northbound, hopefully to the Unicoi Gap. Day three on the Georgia excursion. I think we're going to make it. It may not seem like that, but waking up this morning was great, but there was also a lot of soreness. A lot of soreness to be had, definitely. But it was still really good. Great night's sleep. Again, can't talk enough good things about being out there on the hammock, but just the tiredness, just the amount of tiredness to get back on the trail and to do 9 more miles today. I don't know. At the beginning of this, my spirits were a little high, but just getting back into the slog of it did not feel great. But we did have a good night. Food is going really well. I don't think I brought too much. I think I brought just the right amount. Hit that sweet spot of goodness and tastiness. And I'll have to put some links to what we ended up eating. And one of the things that I think I'm going to do probably tomorrow is do some cold soaking. I've got some lentils and some things that I'll soak throughout the day. I've got a jar for that, and so I'll soak that and then just eat on that tonight or tomorrow night. Maybe tomorrow night. There's talk of a cabin. There. We're gonna pass through Neil's Gap, which of course has a famous little hiker store, and it's the place after Blood Mountain, right after Blood Mountain, and it's got all the shoes in the trees. If you've ever been there, there are tons and tons of shoes in the trees. I think it's either people who have given up on the trail or people who have finished or something, but there are a lot of hiking shoes in that tree, and it seems like, I don't know, they must cut them down every year or something. I don't know. But Neil's Gap is pretty cool. There's some places to do tent camping there at Neil's. There's the hostel, of course. One of the guys here is kind of pushing for a cabin, which, honestly, it's 6 of 1, 6 of 2 of another to me, because my favorite part is camping out. So I'd rather just get to where we're going and then camp out and do it that way than stay in a cabin. But I'm not going to say no to a cabin. A cabin is going to be very nice. One of my fear is that we get to the cabin and we have to, like, just give up. You know, we get to the cabin and, you know, it's too comfortable. but that's what I'm thinking. We hiked by actually where we were supposed to stay, and it was good that we stopped a little bit early because there were no sites left there. It was pretty stacked up, and we would have had problems finding a place. And honestly, it wasn't really halfway as nice as where we ended up staying, because where we ended up staying was kind of up on top of the little ridge. Kind of had the back of a higher ridge of the mountain kind of behind us, blocking blocking all the wind. We were right by the water source. This place was kind of like down in a gully, which I guess is probably because that's a more reliable water source. We're still here in April, so we're pretty much in spring, and so we've got a lot of good water still running around. So I don't know. That's probably my guess as to why that is. But it's interesting. You were talking yesterday about what we've learned from the trail and things that have informed our normal life. And I think walking when you're tired is one of those. I mean, we've all been there. If you've done any backpacking at all, you know, like you do some hiking and your shoulders ache and everything kind of hurts and you strap that pack back on the next day and your body kind of goes, ugh, are you kidding? But yeah, so there is something mental about just doing it again, about saying like, hey, this is the situation I'm in. I'm going to literally buckle down, I guess, and do it. But it's not the same as, I don't know, there's some other pieces about, like, it's not like gritting your teeth and white knuckling it. It's more of just kind of a resignation of further work and just knowing that there's more of the same coming, knowing that you're already tired, and just kind of leaning into that in a way of giving yourself some bodily forgiveness and some good grace, but then to also, again, kind of being encouraging and thankful to yourself to be like, okay, we know what this is going to be like, and it's going to happen. So we went up Blood Mountain. And Blood Mountain has kind of a weird, and I'll say this too. It has a weird history, but I'll say this too. there are some sites leading up to Blood Mountain, which is like Gooch Gap and like Slaughter Gap, like all these names. You're like, geez, what the heck? Who named this stuff? Like, we get it. There was a battle here, but yeah. So that is part of the history of Blood Mountain, is that, supposedly it got its name because there was a big Native American battle that took place there. It was a sacred site, and the mountain ran red with blood. And there's also some urban legend lore about Native Americans and locals believing that extraterrestrials came to Blood Mountain, that it's kind of like a pointed site that they revisit. And in the not too distant past, this is a true story, sadly, there was a guy who cut off this lady's head. And, you know, murdered her up on Blood Mountain. I think in the shelter. I don't know that for sure. But we hiked it years ago. I think I mentioned that the other day. But we hiked it years ago. And we looked it up. Because we heard it from other hikers and stuff. We were like, oh, okay, yeah, that's right. You know, you got to take a lot of hiking stories with a grain of salt. Especially if you're crossing paths with Southbounders or something. You know, they've gone trail mad. But yeah, we looked it up and it was true. Girl got murdered out there. They found the guy, they caught him, and you know, it's just it happens on the trail. It happens everywhere in life. I don't mean people's heads getting cut off, but you know, like like just murder, just people being killed. My dad is pretty funny. He's always very cautious. He's a cautious guy, which is good. And he instilled a good sense of cautiousness into my brother and I. And, but he's always asking, he's like, is it safe? Are you safe on the trail? Are you safe on the, I'm like, yeah, we're safe. We're, you know, we try to keep our heads about us. No pun intended. Sorry. That was totally accidental. Our wits about us. But we try to play it safe. We try to be wise about what we're doing, where we're staying, all those kinds of things. But we're not overly cautious. And my dad always asks us, you know, are you going to bring a gun? And we're like, yeah, no, I'm not going to bring a gun. I know some people do travel with firearms on the trail. There's no reason to do that. Bears, it's not going to help. It's literally not going to help. You could shoot bears all day. And even trained rangers have stories of, not like army rangers, but like forest rangers, trained rangers. They're trained in firearms and stuff. And they have stories of, you know, bear attack and shooting the bear, just like shooting the bear 4 or 5 times and still getting ripped up. Mostly what the gun does is scare the bear off sometimes. And, you know, it's just kind of like luck on how that actually goes down. And in terms of people, like, honestly, the trail, like, per capita compared to anywhere else in the world, the trail is one of the safest places you could possibly be, you know, for the number of people that are on the trail versus the number of people that get killed on it. If you look at the statistics per capita for any other city in the nation, any other town in the nation, any other small town in the nation, any other county in the nation, practically, the trail is one of the safest places. Honestly, it doesn't happen that often, but when it does happen, it definitely makes the headlines, it makes the news, and it can turn you into this big spiral of fear. And so that's, you know, that's one thing that I kind of wanted to talk about, was just the idea of fearfulness and where that kind of leads you and how that affects you. Because it's true, there are lots of different kinds of people that are on the trail. We met another thru-hiker called the Queen of New England. If you want to look her up, she has a great Instagram account where she's chronologically kind of going through her hike. She has been interesting to follow because she also is really positive about a lot of the things that are happening. Some of the trail magic that's going on. If you're not familiar with that term, trail magic is just kind of like the spontaneous stuff that happens when you're on the trail. Sometimes you'll find a cooler full of beer or something, or somebody will stop at one of the gap at one of the road crossovers and be like, just have pizza for people, or fresh fruits and vegetables and things like that. So that's what trail magic is, kind of the general term for all those kinds of things. Which actually, interestingly enough, today, speaking of trail magic, we'll just interject this, but today, mentioned yesterday, one of our guys had blisters on his hands. He was just using some sticks that he found, just kind of roughing it as poles for this trip. And it'd been about 9 years, I think, since he hiked last, something like that. We went out last year, but just for a couple days. And so he was just like, I'll just get sticks. And so that's why I had blisters on his hands, because the roughness of the sticks was just tearing up his hands. And we crossed paths with somebody today. They were getting off the trail, and the guy was just like, you need poles. And he just gave him a set of poles. You know, so that's awesome. That's definitely trail magic. But the Queen of New England, she has different stories on her Instagram posts, and she writes about them a little bit. She has a very positive outlook about the trail in general. She just says, like, the trail is an awesome place to be. The trail is filled with amazing people. There are always people looking out for you. There are always people trying to take care of each other. It's really, really awesome. And so you have kind of that choice. You can either do that, or, you know, you can be really fearful. You can say, like, oh, you know, everybody's out to get me. The trail is full of people, and yeah, some of them might be nice, but most of them are going to be bad or wicked or looking out to get me, or trying to steal my stuff or get what I have or something like that. And maybe that's why you bring a gun or something, because of that fear that's generated. But it's just, to me, it's just not worth it. It's not worth it to have that kind of outlook on life. It's not worth it to have that kind of outlook on this journey that you take, even if you're, you know, if you're a thru hiker, if you're a section hiker, if you're just up there for a weekend, like, why expend the time and energy that it takes to be fearful and to harbor that fear? And I'm not saying don't be smart, because you gotta be smart. As a excellent passage from Proverbs says, we must be as wise as serpents and as innocent as doves, right? So we can hold both of those things together. You don't have to just be totally stupid about anything, but you can be smart and still have a really positive outlook about the kinds of people that God's going to put in your path, or the kinds of people that the universe is going to have you kind of engage with while you're out there. And it changes the trail. It changes the trail. It changes the outlook that you have. It changes the positivity that you carry with you as you're hiking. So I think it's really important to keep that knowledge. So, you know, we try to keep that knowledge as we're going over Blood Mountain. And yeah, this is the place where somebody got their head cut off and, you know, thousands of people in war kind of killed each other. But it's also beautiful. It's also a really beautiful spot. And, you know, we got to the top of the shelter after a long slog up that hill. They were saying that there's a set of hills and stuff before this that we actually hiked yesterday that were worse than Blood Mountain. And I was like, man, I don't know if I'm just like tired or just like worn out or walking on these tired feet or what, but Blood Mountain, it seems hard enough. It seems bad enough. Like I wouldn't call it easy by any stretch, certainly. So we went up, got to the top, rusted out, had some lunch, again, met up with some good folks, kind of touched base again with some of the through hikers that started out around the same time as we did. Saw one guy who was, you know, everybody's trying to get cell service now on the tops of these mountains, which is kind of an interesting change from when I was a kid doing some of these hikes. You know, nobody really brought their cell phones with them, or the service wasn't as good as it is now even. And so seeing people on the tops of these mountains just kind of like hold their phones up and yelling at people on the other side of the line, that's kind of a new experience. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, we had a good lunch. They're also, once you get to Blood Mountain, it's kind of interesting because on the other side, like I said, is Neil's Gap. And so a lot of people just day hike up the other side of Blood Mountain, heading south on the Appalachian Trail. So you'll see like some kids and parents and older folks and stuff who just come up there. So Blood Mountain being what it is, it still has tons of awesome people hiking up, and it's still an incredibly beautiful place. For us coming up there after we were so tired, it was a place of respite and quiet. So, you know, it was really good. Coming down off of that, Brian and I actually got a little lost. We started talking, and the trail kind of it disappears a little bit because you're going over the rocks. There's a lot of real bald rock faces that you're kind of just walking across, and the trail can get a little, you know, they mark it, they paint the rock itself, but if you're not looking down really well, and all of a sudden you just kind of look up and you're like, I don't think we're on the trail anymore. So we did a little bit of backtracking, got back on, talked to some guys about dogs, and this was kind of interesting too. And we can talk more about this. I'll take some hikes with my dog later on in the summer. And but they had some good advice about booties, about not wearing booties, about a couple other things that I'll blend into some later podcasts. But it was good to talk to him. And one of the guy's dogs that he had done 600 miles on the trail, which is amazing. I was like, kudos to you, dog. I think it was like an older 10-year-old mutt or something. I was about mid-size, you know, good size. And interesting too, like they didn't have boots for their dogs, and they didn't have packs for their dogs. So two interesting things I think I'll talk more about later on as I try to hike with our dog, whose name is Figgy. We'll get into more of that a little later. Coming down was great. Going down is sometimes harder than going up, or hard in a different way. My brother infamously got shin splints coming down into Damascus from some high country when we were doing the Mount Rogers section of the Appalachian Trail a couple years ago. So you gotta be cautious. You still use your poles coming down. You don't want to slip. A lot of injuries happen coming down the mountain as opposed to going up. Getting into Neil's Gap is pretty fabulous. It's pretty amazing. It's a big stone structure. There's parking there and everything else. And it's just being on the AT and being the summer, like everybody who works there is into it. They're like, yeah, we know you guys are tired and hungry and all these other kinds of things. And ended up I said Brian and I have kind of been bringing up the back of our group. By the time we got there, the guys had already scheduled a cabin. And so they're like, oh, we got a cabin. We're going to stay. We'll split it, blah, blah, blah. It ended up being somebody's treat, which was amazing and awesome. But so we did do the cabin thing. And I think the nicest part of the cabin was really just some of the camaraderie stuff that we got to have together. We were in Neil's Gap, and they have a big, well, not big, but big in comparison to the wilderness, freezers and all kinds of food to buy and stuff like that. And so we just decided, we're just going to get pizzas. And I think the lady behind the counter, I was like, well, maybe I'll just split one, blah, blah, blah. I don't think I eat a whole pizza by myself. And the lady behind the counter was like, you'll eat a whole pizza. And I was like, all right. And she was totally right. But it was good. The other guys had actually already been down to the cabin and had unloaded their packs. And so they generously carried our packs for us on the way down. There's a little dog leg down to where the cabins are. And I gotta say, I was really, really tired. I think it's just I was more tired coming into those cabins than I was the previous day coming in to the campsite after doing 16 miles. So just something about the 16 and then the next day, again, didn't get overheated, didn't get a heat stroke or anything like that. Didn't get dehydrated, which was really good, but just tired. Just like felt it in my bones, just the weariness of it. And so when we got there, We unpacked some stuff, you know, took our shoes off, started taking some showers and things, and started heating up the pizzas and stuff. Found VHS tapes. Oh, yeah. The cabin had a VHS player, which was amazing. And put in an old Western. Well, not an old Western. A newer Western, I guess. But put in a Western, and we're watching that and eating this pizza. And somehow, I just got, I got locked up, and so I was sitting there. When I got up to get more pizza, everything just it was like unbending, you know, steel or rusty hinges that had all corroded together and everything else. And I was just grunting and groaning and complaining. So it was interesting, and I think it drove some of our group to be like, should we be done tomorrow? Should we not do the last night and the last day? We were looking at, I think at that point, I want to say it was 20 miles, maybe 21. Because I think we had a 10 and an 11 still to do. And I was demoralized. Totally admit it freely. I was demoralized. And so we'll see what happens tomorrow with that. But the story of the day, lesson of the day is you're always going to eat the extra pizza. Whatever food is there, you're going to eat it. And don't just sit on a couch for an hour and a half and not get up, because you will be in pain. All the Advil in the world won't save you from that. All right, well, until tomorrow, we'll see you guys then. Thanks for listening to this episode of Second Mile, a podcast of Project 516. Project 516 is a ministry which seeks to support clergy and lay people as they traverse some of the hardest parts of their lives. In the book of Luke, chapter 5, verse 16, it says that Jesus often walked away from the crowds to seek God and rejuvenate in the wilderness. Project 516 helps hold you accountable, supplies you with resources and community, and clears the way for you to rejuvenate the spiritual path of your life. Let's journey together. To find out more about Project 516, visit us on the web at project516.org. Or find us on Facebook or Instagram at Luke 516.